mountains, deserts and streams. The rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading from the May 2025 issue of Arizona Highways. This article is entitled The Story of Her Life. Was started out as a short essay for a creative writing class, turned into a lengthy look back at a family's life in the El Presidio Historic District of Tucson. For writer Melanie Martinez, it's a story that had to be written. This article is written by Kelly Vaughn. Ritual transforms dried corn kernels into masa. First, in a process known as nixtamalization, the kernels are soaked and cooked in an alkaline solution, then washed to remove any excess solution as well as the outer husk. Grinding comes next via food processors or hand crank grinders or molinos, traditional stone mills, and the resulting dough is known as masa. Masa harina is masa in its dry, powdered form. Such grinding is an ancient process deeply rooted in Mexican culture, having first been developed 10,000 years ago, and for generations between 1933 and 2000, a white adobe building, El Rapido, was the center of the corn grinding universe in Tucson's El Presidio Historic District. This story is a look through the windows of that building on which were painted grocery, El Rapido Molino de Nixtamal, manufacturer de tortillas y masa. This, too, is a story about a woman, the great-granddaughter of the man who started El Rapido. This is a story about her family and the tender thread that ties people together and the big and small heartbreaks that tear them apart. It took Melanie Martinez more than 20 years to write The Molino, a memoir about her family's home and eatery. What started as a project in her undergraduate creative writing course became a bold, immersive dive into memory, food, and love. It became a reflection on faith, connection, and the Sonoran Desert, where her family has lived for 9 generations. It became a journey into her family's history, but more importantly, into their stories. When I first started recording the stories of my family, I had a feeling of, why aren't these stories in the world, Martinez says. But really, there wasn't an absence of stories. Borderland stories have been here for a long time, and they will continue to be around. Many of us near the border or in the families of people who are from these places, we've heard them and will continue to hear them. The stories are not absent. In 1933, at the height of the Great Depression, Aurelio and Martina Perez opened their corn grinding factory, El Rapido, the family home. The Perezes had several children, including Martinez's beloved grandmother, Juanita, was there too, and the property occupied 2 addresses, 220 North Meyer Avenue and 77 West Washington Street. My best guess is that the building, the Molino House where my grandmother grew up, must have been built around the arrival of the railroad in the 1880s, Martinez writes. A Sonoran transformation of mud bricks next to the river and between the mountains. There, the Perez's ground corn for customers and prepared masa in the Molino House. They also sold groceries, cigarettes, and chilies. The couple made their own tortillas and tamales and started selling them to people in the neighborhood, too. In the 1950s, the couple's oldest daughter, Soledad Perez, took over the business. She was one of the only women running a business in Tucson at the time, Martinez writes. She was a beautiful choir singer, single, strong, trailblazing, and clever. When Soledad decided to marry in November 1976, at the age of 62, Edith Sayer Armstrong wrote a bulletin for the Arizona Daily Star. El Rapido has been closed, and you may have wondered why. Proprietress Soledad Perez found it necessary to shut down the tortilla factory for a few days to prepare for wedding Friday to Dolores Terrazan. Patrons will be happy to know that it'll soon be business as usual at El Rapido, but with the added attraction of Mr. Terrazan, who, by the way, plans to add chorizo to the menu. Sadly, Terrazan died just 3 years after the wedding, and Soledad came to terms with walking away from the business. Tony Peyron, Martinez's father, took over shortly after her brother Ricky was born. "I began working for my father as soon as I can walk, talk, and take orders," Martinez writes. "Alongside my tia, Micaela, my first task is to help make corn tortillas. Tia Mica feeds masa balls into a giant black machine lined with gas burners, and I stand on the other end of the conveyor belt to lift the toasty rounds off the belt and into a stack that can be bagged. This is my introduction to burned fingertips." Martinez worked with her father, brother, and other family members as she inched towards adolescence, maneuvering childhood, friendships, and the expectations of her Catholic faith while making deliveries and tackling her daily tasks at El Rapido. By high school, she decided she wanted out of the business, opting to go to the University of Arizona to pursue her undergraduate degree. "I was working for my dad and had gotten a scholarship for all of my coursework, which was amazing," Martinez says. "I didn't know why I was supposed to be there, but I was the first person in my family to graduate from college, and I know they had a lot of expectations of what I would do and be, especially regarding income." After a couple of years of being at UA and not feeling like I fit in or belonged in any way in that space, I decided the only way I was going to be able to keep my scholarship was if I kept going to class. And the only way I could keep going to class was if I got to do something like creative writing. And in one of those writing classes in the fall of 2000, creative nonfiction instructor Allison Deming encouraged her students to submit personal essays. Through that writing, Martinez began to truly understand the significance of her family's business and the meaning of her childhood. She submitted her essay. A week later, she learned El Rapido, a casualty of gentrification, would close for good on December 24, 2000. Today, the building houses a hotel and gallery, as well as a small space from which the Cheris Pasta and Coffee Shop operate. Days later, Martinez was asked to read her piece aloud in front of the class. Tears fell, and she decided to expand the narrative. "For this first time in my life, I actually recorded something that was happening in the life of my family," she says. "Then I realized how important that document was." In one vignette, Martinez recalls watching her uncle paint the mural that would long adorn El Rapido's Washington Street-facing wall. She watched him use broad brushstrokes to create a painting of a man asleep with his back against a blooming sorrero, his face shrouded by the brim of his sombrero. Neighbors complained, citing the perpetuation of a tired stereotype of Mexican people, but Martinez's father and uncle were unmoved. Now, when Martinez thinks of the mural, she thinks only of working, of grinding. The sombrero-wearing, two-dimensional man becomes a second narrator in The Molino. Through another vignette, she shares her fear of the old house where the relics that lived there were portraits of the ancestors who came before her. "I'm not sure if my father comprehended my fear and fascination with the old, dead things I was sure were living there in the floorboard," she wrote. "He never explained much of anything to me, and in school I was taught no history lessons that told the story, no definitions of these presidio spirits, who they were, how they lived, ate, and died." In more stories, Martinez explores grief and fear, love and separation, pain and triumph. She wrote those stories as she grappled with her own spirituality and pursued additional academic endeavors, a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing from Goucher College in Towson, Maryland, and an appointment as senior lecturer in the Department of English at the UA's College of Social and Behavioral Sciences, where she teaches courses on borderlands-focused foundation writing and food writing. "What was challenging was when I felt the pressure to remember everything on my own," she says. "Then, when I tried the approach of what I learned was the right thing to do, the approach of interviewing my family, I realized that wasn't really the way my family works. I felt like I was tricking them into speaking with me. Trying to capture what they were saying was really important to me, so I had to make the leap to, this isn't just my story, this has to be a collective story." University of Arizona Press published The Molino in September 2024. Its cover features a photo of Martinez and her brother Ricky in front of the Washington Street mural in 1989, and its pages share memories from Martinez, her brother, her father, and others who spent their days in and around El Rapido. The book and Martinez have received critical acclaim. Still, she sometimes has a hard time calling herself a writer. "I haven't felt the courage to call myself a poet, even though I'm doing poetry," she says. "I guess that's how I define it. I'm doing this. I'm practicing this as opposed to identifying myself as that person. I think, in a way, that's self-preservation. If it really happens that I never write another book again, then I wouldn't have hurt myself by calling myself a writer or an author. But I'm not sure if I really have a way of identifying myself as a writer, other than to say some of my highest values are embedded in what it means to be a writer in Tucson, in a place. Maybe even if I never wrote another thing, I would still have a lot to say about the place that I'm from and a lot to say about the other writers who are from this place. That's the ritual of writing, maybe. Rinsing words in an alkaline solution, grinding love and strength and experience into phrases, then sentences, then paragraphs and pages, sharing those words with family, with friends, with strangers, and with the ghosts in the back rooms of our minds. And this concludes the story of her life. The scenic drive for May 2025 is Tinakani Scenic Road by Noah Austin. There's plenty to see in the Navajo Nation, and that generally means doing plenty of driving. That's to be expected, given that the tribe's land covers 27,000 square miles, including much of Arizona's northeast corner. Thankfully, the in-between stretches are worth seeing too, including the Tinakani Flat Mesa Rock Scenic Road, a section of U.S. Route 191 that forms part of a route from Monument Valley to Canyon de Chelly. From Kayenta, south of Monument Valley, take a trek east on U.S. Route 160 to its intersection with U.S. 191, this drive's starting point. As you head south through a high desert landscape brimming with low, rounded sandstone buttes, you'll catch glimpses of the distant Carrizo Mountains to the east. More views of this range open up around mile 2, and to the southwest, the rim of Black Mesa, a defining landmark on this part of the Colorado Plateau, stretches along the horizon. A few miles later, the Lukachukai Mountains appear to the southeast before you cut through a sandy area. The road then dips into a landscape carved by deep washes with sandstone mounds rising like nuclear submarines from a sea of sagebrush. At mile 11, roadside buttes on the left cradle numerous caverns and alcoves sculpted by wind and rain over millions of years. And a couple of miles later, a rock near the road resembles the fingers of one of Monument Valley's mittens beginning to erupt from the ground. The small town of Rock Point is next at mile 15, and oddly shaped landmarks line the road there and for the next several miles. Past a row of low, strangely textured buttes on the left, you'll reach the Dancing Rocks, a frequently photographed pair also known as Whale Rock for the resemblance to a surfacing ocean creature. Behind them is a steep, jagged wall of sandstone that parallels the road for the next few miles, offering a look at alcoves and a small natural arch. At mile 24, the road descends into the Chinle Valley, and you'll get your first views of Round Rock and Little Round Rock to the southwest, along with more sculpted sandstone on the other side of the road. After a mostly flat section, the road descends again, this time toward the town of Round Rock. You'll now find yourself pointed toward the Chaska Mountains on the southeast, but you won't make it that far. Instead, at the intersection with Indian Route 12 at mile 32.2, turn right to stay on U.S. 191 and head southwest. This stretch offers an up-close look on the right at Round Rock, the butte, a wide mesa spiked with sandstone spires on its edges. You'll roll over Round Top Ridge before the road descends one more time through a section of low-layered conical buttes reminiscent of the Painted Desert to the southwest. After a Chinle Wash crossing, the landscape flattens out and the final stretch of the drive bisects a broad valley and passes scattered Navajo settlements. The scenic road officially ends a few miles south of many farms. This drive's conclusion. From there, you can continue south to Canyon de Chelly National Monument, or you can retrace your route back to the Monument Valley area. There are plenty of other options, too, if you're willing to do a little more scenic driving. It's a Navajo Nation, after all. And this concludes Tinakani Scenic Road. The next articles are from the June 2025 issue of Arizona Highways. Start out with the editor's letter by Robert Steve. What does the color green smell like? That's what the girl with the freckles asked me. I was talking to a room full of second graders about wildlife in Arizona when she hit me with that question. I glanced over at the teacher with the look of desperation. I thought they'd ask me about coatimundis and ringtails. She just smiled and shrugged her shoulders. Like a walk-on freshman looking into the pool from a 10-meter platform, I stood there for a few seconds, afraid to move. That's a very good question, I finally said to the young Barbara Walters. I think the color green smells like... I think it smells like fresh mown grass. There was no response from Ms. Walters, but one of her classmates raised his hand and started talking about his dad's John Deere lawnmower. He was proud, as if his father were the head groundskeeper at Augusta. Maybe that's something he'll remember when he's older. I can still remember my grandfather's riding mower. Not the brand, but I remember that it was yellow, and I remember the smell of cigar smoke mixed with fresh mown grass, especially the grass. For me, that's the smell of green. It's also the smell of summer, along with campfire smoke and chlorine and coppertone and petunias and burnt marshmallows and alfalfa and black dirt in a vegetable garden. Those smells bring back memories. As a boy, I lived for summer. It's in my DNA. My mother's French surname means of the summer, and summer is when I learned how to water ski and pop wheelies and flirt on the beach. Even better, summer is when my family would hit the road to go camping. Like Hannibal's army crossing the Alps, we moved a lot of gear from one Northwoods lake to another. We didn't take the kitchen sink, but we did take the cast iron frying pans. That's another smell of summer. My father making bacon and eggs in the old Griswold frying pans. Summertime is always the best of what might be, our friend Chuck Bowden said. And summertime is the time to hit the road. It's been that way in Arizona for at least 100 years. In our second issue, we published our first editorial. It was focused on the swarm of locals who were fleeing to California for the summer. One of the most worthy movements launched by the civic and commercial organizations of Arizona is that of See Arizona First. The editorial from May 1925 begins. Each year, citizens of Arizona, whose scenery and climate is far superior to that of the Pacific Coast, journey to California to spend the summer months and untold sums of money. The untold sum was estimated to be $2 million, and we were intent on getting some of it back. See Arizona First and travel over Arizona's highways, the piece suggests. The White Mountains are now open and accessible to the public. The Rice-Springerville Highway is now in such condition that a trip by automobile through the heart of the mountains may be made without the least difficulty. All who visit this section this summer will be delighted with the beauties of the mountains, the magnificent forests, the enticing trout streams, and the invigorating air. Why not spend your summer vacation in Arizona? With all that Arizona has to offer, why should her sons and daughters strew $2 million along the beaches of our sister state? The point is well taken, but even the most dogged aficionados have to admit the beaches next door are pretty spectacular. Limantour in Port Reyes, Pfeiffer in Big Sur. We don't have beaches like that. We do, however, have an incredibly diverse landscape that ranges from arid deserts and canyon lands to forested mountains and glaciated peaks. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, there are 52 Level 3 ecoregions in Arizona, including subalpine forests. That's where you'll want to begin this summer. With an elevation of about 8,500 feet, the daytime highs in those forests are usually in the upper 70s. It's even cooler when this afternoon rain comes down. People ask me about my favorite place in Arizona. I have a few, depending on the season. In the summer, there are two in particular, and I'll be at both of them this month. Up first is the North Rim, where the subalpine forest is thick with Engelmann spruce, corkbark firs, blue spruce, white firs, and aspens. A few weeks later, I'll be in the White Mountains, camping with my family in another subalpine forest. Our camping gear is more sophisticated than it was in the 1960s, and the load is lighter, but the memories my daughters are making are similar to mine. And someday, maybe, they'll be triggered by the smell of something from this trip. Although our sense of smell isn't utilized as much as hearing, touch, taste, or sight, it's the sense most closely associated with memory. That's because our brain processes smell differently than the other four senses, and the brain's smell center, known as the olfactory bulb, is directly connected to the hippocampus, which holds our memory. Literally, those two parts are tied together, and that connection can transform the smell of Old Spice into memories of a grandfather's medicine cabinet. For my family, there won't be any campfire smoke this month, not with the inevitable fire restrictions, but there will be the resinous scent of the Engelmann spruce and petrichor, that earthy fragrance that comes when rain falls on dry soil. I'll have my old Griswold, too, in case I'm allowed to use my camp stove. I hope so, because breakfast in the backcountry is one of the best smells of summer. It makes me think of my dad. And that concludes Editor's Letter. Kelly Vaughn writes about Caviglia Cafe. In the early 1930s, Angelo Caviglia began construction on a 2,000-square-foot adobe building with an adjacent 700-square-foot livery stable. His goal? To create a gathering place for residents of Arivaca and the nearby community of Ruby, which was experiencing a boom thanks to the nearby Montana mine. Caviglia Cafe, named in honor of Caviglia and his parents, Bernardo and Pastora, who homesteaded in Arivaca in 1887, opened on June 5, 1934. The dance hall, saloon, and cafe quickly became popular among cowboys, their rancher bosses, and miners. The mining heyday was happening, says Emily Bishton, who owns the current iteration of the property, Arivaca Dance Hall, with her husband, Conrad Uno. Ruby was full of people. It was a good deal to come to Arivaca and have a party. But when the mine closed in 1940, much of Caviglia's cafe's business dried up too. Caviglia closed his doors and moved to Tucson with his family. What happened next at the cafe is unclear, but some local lore indicates it operated as a house of ill repute until Hack and Emma May Townsend purchased it and converted it into a residence. There, they raised their daughter, Hackling, while opening a general store, a gas station, and the El Tejano Cafe just across the street. The Townsends lived at the corner of 5th Street and Ruby Road for 50 years. Emma May was the last teacher at the Arivaca Schoolhouse, which closed in 1953, and after Hack's death in 1990, she worked with the community to open the Arivaca Museum inside the family's former gas station building. The former dance hall became a rental property after Emma May's death in 1994, then sat vacant for several years. In 2016, architect Nell Schmetz bought it and began an extensive renovation. When Bishton and Uno took over in 2021, they continued that work. We're from Seattle, but we've been coming to Arivaca since 1993 to hike and birdwatch, Bishton says. Every time we drove by the building, there was just something about it. Bishton, a former restoration project manager, and Uno, a former sound engineer and producer, had a new mission, to preserve the building as a piece of Arivaca's history. After we bought it, we had a lot of open houses with the community to find out what people thought was missing, Bishton says. And a music venue was a prevailing thought. While the venue doesn't serve food or drinks, it has attracted a slew of beloved Arizona bands, including Pick and Holler, the Sun Punchers, and the Joe Baker Trio. We wanted to bring music here that wouldn't be here otherwise, Bishton says. That's been our guiding light. And this concludes Caviglia Cafe. This month, June, in history. Bidding open for construction of a road to the north rim of the Grand Canyon on June 5, 1928. Today, that road is the North Rim Parkway, State Route 67, which is open during the North Rim's operating season of mid-May to mid-October. On June 11, 1822, rancher and prospector Abraham Harlow Peoples was born in North Carolina. Peoples was one of the earliest European-American settlers of central Arizona, and the town of Peoples Valley is named for him. Cowboy artist and author Ross Santee, an inaugural member of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame, died in Globe at age 76 on June 28, 1965. That concludes today's readings from Arizona Highways. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
I love you, Arizona. Your mountains, deserts, and streams rise of dust to the bases. And the outlaws I see in my dreams. I love you, Arizona.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Log on to sunsounds.org, left click on broadcast info and audio, then under programming links, left click on demand podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.